Welcome to Dunzo. This is a podcast that explores hookups and breakups of famous lovers and friends, both real and fake, and all the discarded pop culture of yesteryear. I'm your host, Troy McEady. You guys, welcome to whatever episode this is of Dunzo. It is me, Troy McEady. My hair is down this week. My hair is down. I'm so comfortable. I'm so chill because I know that this episode is going to be easy, fun, funny, light. I feel swaddled. I am joined today by my internet road dog.
Yes.
Dara, how are you?
Troy, I'm better with you. And I will say I'm even better picturing you with your hair down. Like, I'm picturing you in like a really beautiful like Lisa Rinna wig or something, just like very straight, and you just like shaking out your hair.
I'm really sensually removing bobby pins like in a thriller film.
Yes,
you know what I mean, removing them from my twist and then
yes, and you take off your glasses and you shake it out and we're like, oh, he's beautiful.
I'm like literally doing that right now, though, is the funny thing. Like, I'm like actually like shaking my head like a Charlie's Angel removing her like helmet.
When you talk about it, you have to do it. It's just involuntary.
Dara, first of all, okay, so I have so many questions for you before we even get into it. Today, just so you guys know, we are discussing Jennifer's Body. This was the most requested movie by far when I did a poll on my Instagram about what horror movies you guys wanted to see me cover this month. This was the one. So we're going to just start right out the gate hot. I can't think of a better person to discuss it with. But before we get into the Jennifer's Body of it all, I first and foremost have to ask you, Dara, are you watching Holly Madison review Girls Next Door on YouTube by chance?
Honey, am I ever? That is my ASMR.
I knew okay. It.
It is, I have gotten now into the habit. Well, so I watched like the first two, and then I went back and I put up my Tubi browser and my YouTube browser. And so every time she says something, because she doesn't play the episode within the episode. So now I'm just like double clicking through each browser, like pause, play. Just so I can really watch it along with her.
That's actually a really good idea because she doesn't even, I was actually wondering this too. Like, I was like, is she wearing AirPods or is she literally watching the show on mute?
I don't think she's watching it on mute because, well, maybe she is because there are moments where it feels like she's just commenting generally on what's happening. But
right.
Then other times she does sort of mention like, oh, someone said this. I think she must have, this is my guess, she has one ear pod in, in like the side that isn't camera.
That's what I was thinking too, because I was like, there's no way she's just going to watch this silently. Like, what? But no, that's such a good idea. I want to do that because I do visually want to see what she's looking at. And I thought it was really funny in the first one that she was like, I know that there are other people doing this online. She's like, Whitney Port is currently doing this, but like, you guys have to understand that Whitney Port has a better relationship with her producers than I ever will. Like, they will block me from talking about this. So I'm not going to take the chance. It's so funny.
I would say to her, she should really try to do a little more of a concerted effort to kind of illustrate a little more what's happening, because not everyone is going to be like me and so interested in it that I'm flipping back, because that is very conscious viewing to be doing that. Like, the first time around I was putting on makeup and just sort of, you know, listening to it, and you don't really understand what's happening. She needs to be a more colorful storyteller. But I still love it.
You couldn't be more right, though. And it's so funny because she'll post, like, Like, she doesn't show images of the episode, I guess, because she's worried about that too, which I think that's like maybe a little overboard. Like,
you that, could show that some is overboard. She could easily use screenshots, I think.
She only uses like 2002 like Kodak Easy Share Polaroid photos.
Because that's the photos she owns, I bet.
Yeah. They're like pictures that were stuck in her mirror in her bedroom. Yes. You know what I mean?
Also, did you notice that she pretty much never, except like one or two times, and I think probably accidentally, mentions Kendra by name? She calls her this girl.
Yes, she does. It's so funny to me. I love it. Because she knows. She knows better.
And I also, at first, I was confused because I didn't realize what she was doing. And I was like, who the F is she talking about? This girl. I was like, and I like went into the episode and I was like, oh, Kendra.
Right. Yeah. Because it's like she knows that it'll get used as a soundbite.
She is very savvy with that.
Yeah. She's smart. I love her so much. Like you said, it is ASMR, really.
It's everything. I think Holly Madison is ASMR embodied. Like her face, her looks are ASMR to my eyes. Her voice is ASMR to my ears.
Yes.
I'm sure she smells like something that would tickle my nostrils.
Oh my God, I know. You know she just smells good from absolutely head to toe, for sure.
Absolutely. And you know that like she has the softest upper arms. Like she doesn't have any of like the ketosis or whatever it is, like little bumpies. She is perfectly smooth and a perfectly even complexion from shoulder to wrist.
Yeah, no chicken skin.
No chicken skin, baby.
I hope that she somehow comes across just this clip of us speaking about her, actually, to be honest with you.
And, you know, podcast nation, do your thing.
Yeah, let her know. We know she doesn't have chicken skin. Well, so as I said before, we are talking about Jennifer's body today. I'm so excited to get into this with you because I just have so many thoughts. Like, I'm overwhelmed by how much this movie makes me feel. And I know that I just have a feeling that you're the same way. And I just have to first ask you, like, what is your journey with this movie? When was the first time you saw it? And did you like it when you first saw it?
Okay. You're exactly right that this movie is so... It's me. It embodies me. It embodies my sensibilities.
Right.
So I probably watched... So it came out in 2009, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I saw it a few years later, just like by myself on TV. And I will say one of the heartbreaking things is I never watched it in theaters because of the way they bumbled the marketing campaign.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about this in articles and stuff as like a look back on how it became a cult hit. Mm-hmm. But it was marketed to teenage boys because of Megan Fox, when it very much is not a teenage boy movie.
Right.
Just by like, you know, putting her in like sexy outfits on the poster and just like cutting the trailer as just being sexy, which, listen, I love a sexy woman. Megan Fox is my bi queen. Okay. But I was just like, ugh, what is this? I didn't think too much about it.
Right.
Watched it for the first time. And honestly, maybe it was the best time for me to watch it at this point, towards the end of college, because I had had a Jennifer's body type relationship with the girl in college. So it resonated with me on such a high level that it probably wouldn't have if I saw it before that point.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I watched it then I watched it again a few years later, obsessed with it some more. And then I watched it this past weekend in preparation. And it really does, every viewing to me completely holds up.
I agree with that. And I really respect the fact that you had a sort of natural, progressive, like, learning to love this movie, because I feel like with the way that this movie is written about now, it does feel like people, there are a lot of people who genuinely love it and have had the same journey as you. And then there's this other group of people who, like, think they're supposed to like it now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's so annoying. Like, every single person that I see being like, Jennifer's body, I'm like, there's no fucking way that you like this movie for longer than, like, a month.
Exactly. I mean, to me, Jennifer's body, so, I'm getting into the horror game as far as if y'all don't know me, I also write, and I'm getting into writing horror movies, and
cool.
Jennifer's body and Get Out, and also The Invitation, which is written and directed by Karen Kusama, who directed Jennifer's Body.
Oh, I didn't know that she directed The Invitation.
Yes. But those are, like, my three of, not my biggest influences in horror, but influences as far as, like, realizing what a horror movie could be,
mm-hmm.
and inspiring, like, what kind of style I would want to have. And yeah, I'm just absolutely, absolutely obsessed.
You know, it's so funny because it's like, I'm happy that more people care about this movie now and understand how incredible it is, how fucking well written it is, and how fleshed out these characters are, and, you know, how amazing Amanda and Megan are in this film. But it also makes me, it makes me sad, and it makes me very angry that, like,
yes.
it took a whole fucking Me Too movement and a bunch of women coming forward about being assaulted for people to understand, like, the nuance of a woman as a lead in a horror film written by a woman. Is it that fucking hard? You know what I mean? Like people were really, really confused by the thought of this movie when it came out. Like, they really just could not wrap their head around it. And I think that it's because, and we'll talk about this, like, obviously we'll get into it, but I think that it's because it purposely breaks all of the traditional horror tropes, and yeah. it does it in this really sort of, like, in your face way. Like, you know, you never really, like, this movie was marketed to be, like you said, of, like, women having, like, lesbian experiences, and Megan Fox with hard nipples being sexy, and, you know, getting out of a lake or whatever naked. But it's funny because when you watch the movie, and the reason that men, you know, young boys didn't like it is because you never actually see Megan naked. And it feels really intentional that you don't. Like, there's a million scenes that are in slow motion, and they seem like they're going to lead up to the traditional, you know, payoff of, you know, the slow camera pan down the body is wet, you look at her boobs. And it purposely doesn't do it. And it does it in a way that's like I said, it seems intentional and kind of like a slap across the face.
And I completely agree with that. And I also think that movies in general, but a lot of horror movies really caters to the male gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And this often, like you said, it subverts that. But I think a lot of the men who watched this, the horror fans, were kind of put off by a female lead, a female monster, and then all of the victims being boys,
mm-hmm.
like a sort of like castration of the entire gender, where literally every guy in the movie kind of gets his end.
Right.
And in the end, in some way or another, the women kind of triumph, sort of, in the best way they can.
Yeah, I agree with that. It really is a movie about like female emotions and mm-hmm. female friendship. You know, at the core of this movie, yes. it's about two girls that are friends. And, you know, the horror stuff is really like it's almost the B plot. The A plot of the movie is their friendship and them navigating this really confusing, you know, at times codependent, at times mm-hmm. competitive, at times sexual, you know, this really layered female friendship that is just like insanely interesting. Like their friendship is the heart of this movie.
I have a theory that I'm just thinking of on the fly here.
Okay.
Is I think all of the best horror movies, you can really like attribute a lot of symbolism to them, but they're also very just like monster, bloody, horror forward, where if you want to dig into the symbolism, you can, but if you mm-hmm. just want to watch it passively, mm-hmm, you can mm-hmm. do that too. Jennifer's body is so, like you said, the horror is kind of the B plot, and there's so much more heart in it, and like women being able to like see themselves in the right. movie. Like you can identify, I mean, I'm sure there's not many people being like, I'm a Jennifer, but you can like see yourself in this friendship. And I imagine there was like a lot of guys who just show up to see a horror movie yeah. and they don't see themselves in this mm-hmm. friendship. And then the horror is fun, but it's not super straightforward, like slasher movie or whatever. And they just like, it just went over their heads. Like, honestly, it's like a little too smart for them.
I was going to say, I do think that it's too smart. It's too smart for the average sort of horror bro. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that. And I think because, you know, I've always said, and I've said this many times on this podcast when I've covered female driven horror movies, I love female rage horror.
Like, me too.
I love that so much. Obviously, you know, like Carrie is like one of my all-time favorite movies, and I think it does such a good job of using, you know, the concept of like female hormones as like a monster, a metaphorical monster.
Yes.
And this movie, it is not, like you said earlier, it's not through the male gaze. So when men go see it, it's like they don't understand the beats of it, because it's about the emotions of these girls. Like, it's about the changes that are happening to Jennifer after an assault.
Exactly. And it's, I mean, in my experience as just being like a witness to men, not being one myself, I have never really maybe a little bit, but not as much across the board, seeing the dynamic of friendship between two men that I've seen time and time again with two women, which is like, it is a romantic relationship that is yet still platonic, like a codependent, yeah. like they're basically girlfriends, but they're not like bridging the like sexual, maybe a little bit, but not all the way. Like, I just feel like I've had so many friendships in my life where it like burns hot and fast, mm-hmm. and we're like obsessed with each other, and we might as well be girlfriends,
right?
And it's like, this is my number one person, but actually it's like kind of toxic.
You literally just said a fucking mouthful, and I mean, it looks like you're reading my notes. You just like kind of scared me a little bit, to be honest. It's like, I'm having a Jennifer's body moment. you're like word for word reading my notes in front of me. No, like you're completely right. And I think, you know, as somebody who, you know, as I always say, as a gay man, it's like truly being on the edge of glory, because you get to experience life as a man and see how men operate. But like, men are so like discarded around me. Like their guard is so down because they're not threatened by me that I see this weird side of straight men that I don't think women get to see very often.
Yeah. The
more feminine side, if you will. Where they're like, yeah, I mean, I actually really like Britney Spears. But, you know, like, I see all that stuff.
Yeah.
But then, like, obviously, I've, like, only really been super close in my life, like, really intensely close to women and groups of women. And, like, watching really intimately, seeing female friendships. And I've, like, this to me was, like, very visceral. Like, even watching it now, I was like, God, like, there's so much about this that makes me feel like I'm in middle school, high school, college again. Like, I just, it's so intense. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, like, female friendships, especially when you're younger and you are sort of less aware of your surroundings and how people perceive you.
Yeah.
It's like you are truly soul bonded. And like you said, sometimes it teeters on intimate and like this really sometimes sexual, but like sometimes non-sexual, where like it almost extends sex. It's like you're like mind fucking every day.
Yeah. It, you know, okay. There's this like watching it for a third time. I feel like I picked up so many more things that I think I like vibed with just intuitively, but I was able to pick it out a little more. And there's, I forget at what point in the movie, it's towards the beginning where like Jennifer is getting like aggressive with Needy, and it kind of like a roughhousing wrestling kind of way.
Yeah.
And the friendship that I had in college that I referenced in the beginning, it brought me back to, there's this one time where we were like hanging out with like a couple guys or something. And she was very Jennifer. She was very much a Jennifer. And she just started like roughhousing with me and like kind of like trying to wrestle me and stuff.
Right.
And which is crazy because if you know me, like I am I am the most like, I'm a couch sloth unless you put on music, and then like, yes, I will dance my ass off. I'll be the last one off the floor. But like any other physical movement.
Right. Yeah, like I'm not trying to wrestle with you, girl.
Okay. But she was just like, come on, let's wrestle. And she was like, and this girl was athletic. So oh she was God. Like taking me down.
What the fuck?
And like something like that, it's like, that sort of like, I don't know, like woman to woman, there's, you know, like with a guy, it's like, well, you're a girl. I'm not supposed to hit you. But like woman to woman, it's like, I don't know. Let's like fuck around. Let's do some shit. Like,
yeah.
Like getting aggressive, getting passionate. Yeah, I just, there's a, I don't know. Can anyone else relate out there?
No, Dara, like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's not me, but I get it because I've like watched it my whole life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've watched this happen. And it also, I think that they do a good job of not only showing that, like, yes, their relationship at times, it does turn just like overtly sexual, but like Needy is discovering her sexuality through her more powerful friend. Which is a tale truly as old as time.
Like, absolutely.
She's figuring out herself through observing her friend. And I don't know. I think one of the really cool things about this movie too is like you never see Needy like judging Jennifer for being sexual or like wanting to be overtly sexual or like wanting men to like her. She just sort of is in awe of her. She's inspired by her. Like, she's spellbound for most of the fucking movie by her. She just thinks that she's, like, really cool. And Needy herself is also sexual. Like, she fucks. You know what I mean? She's not, like, a virgin and she doesn't fit the typical, like, slasher rules. She fucks. You know what I mean?
She fucks. And then it all culminates in the I think it's the final line where Needy says, if you're bitten by the monster and you survive, you take on some of their powers.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like the first time I heard that line, I was like, dang, that's right. So right. Because I did feel like in my own friendship, being with this person who was like more out there, more sexual, more confident, I do remember like her sort of just like that attitude in a good way rubbing off on me.
Right, totally. Yeah.
Even though I had to be like, okay, we need to part ways.
Right. Like, it was nice knowing you, girl, but thank you for like giving me a little Captain Planet moment there and like giving me a little bit of your power.
I have been changed for the better, but right. We must end this.
We simply must move on. Totally. And yeah, I mean, I just love the way both these girls are written. There's not one that I like more than the other, to be honest, when I rewatch. And I remember, like, when I was younger, just, you know, based on not being able to kind of go as deep into the movie mentally as I can now, I remember thinking that Needy was, like, really pathetic and stuff and, like, whatever. And she's presented on paper to be that way.
I mean, but my God, her name is Needy.
Her literal name is Needy.
A touch on the nose there.
Right. They're like, helpless, come on.
I feel like Needy was like the placeholder name. And then someone was like, I don't know, I actually kind of like it.
Right. Yeah. They're like, Needy girl one. And they're like, wait. But she's so, Needy herself is so fucking iconic because, like I said, she breaks more horror tropes than Jennifer, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Up, like, even at the very beginning of the movie, literally the first 10 minutes, when we're introduced to her, they're at that bar, and she hears the band talking shit about her friend. And in any typical movie like that, like, if this was Carrie, you know, Carrie would, like, put her hair in front of her face and, like, walk into a corner and hide. But she walks right up to them and is like, fuck both of you. Don't talk about my friend like that. She's not going to fuck you. You guys are gross. Like, she's really strong initially. She doesn't, like, you know, she, like, discovers herself and stuff, but she doesn't have to, like, become strong. Like, she's strong the whole time.
And she, from the very beginning, she is taking care of herself. She's taking care of her friend. Yeah. She never brings her mother into it. Like, I think it's really interesting that we know that she has a mother, and we know that she has a mother who cares about her, but she's also like this, probably this single, she is a single mother. And I feel like, you know, right. Needy doesn't go to her mother and say, I need help. She cleans up Jennifer's mess in that first night when she like pukes blood all over her floor.
Right. Yeah.
She just cleans it up by herself and, you know, this is my problem. I'll take care of it on my own and not burden anybody. Like, that's very, very strong. She doesn't even, I mean, she hardly even lets her boyfriend help her. She extends the opportunity. He doesn't really take it. And she says, okay, I'm going to do this on my own.
Yeah, and this movie, her boyfriend, if anything, is more of the damsel. Like, he plays more of the traditional female role in a horror movie, where he ends up having to be saved, and he doesn't believe what's going on, and all of that stuff. Needy spends the whole movie, like, chasing after the danger. Like, she literally, like, goes to the library, like, learns all the stuff about the occult. Like, you know, at the end, when they're in, the pool, she literally, from across town, she sprints to save her boyfriend, who's like essentially tied to the train tracks, and she dives into the fucking pool and like jumps on top of Jennifer, who she knows is a literal demon. Like, she's actually really fucking cool.
and I did think, when she jumps into the pool, I was like, damn, I would take one look at that pool and be like, no, thank you. And I'm serious about it. I will say, actually, if I were needy, and this is my own character flaw, is I'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to keep all this Jennifer stuff to myself, and I'm just going to be real nice to her. And then when we go to college, like, she can go on her merry way.
Do your thing, girl. I'll be seeing you. Lila's. It's like, good luck with it all, wherever you end up. But yeah, and I also, one of the things that I definitely wanted to talk to you about is, you know, obviously, so this movie is written by Diablo Cody. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Diablo Cody went into this movie sort of hoping to make a cultural sort of coming of age, Clueless, Mean Girls, Heathers. I think probably more specifically Heathers.
Yeah.
It feels like she went into this like wanting to make that kind of film that kind of defines a generation. And it's sad that that didn't happen, because you can feel like the world building here. Like,
yeah,
she created a language. I mean, they use like words and shit that are, they use the word freak-tard. Like, they
God. Diablo and her like trying to create a vernacular. That was the one thing on the third watch where I was like, I love her writing and everything. And I think her writing has definitely influenced my writing, but I do think that creating a vernacular is a little like, okay.
Right. Yeah. Like, you don't
dial it back a touch.
Yeah. You don't have to do that. Like, you don't have to literally create a vernacular like Clueless and like Heathers. Like, it's fine if you don't. And if anything, I think it's probably the worst thing about this movie.
Yeah. Like, maybe just sprinkle it. Like, Fuck Me Gently with a Chainsaw is, you know, is perfect. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I haven't seen Heathers in a long time. But, like, I feel like that's the only, there's not that many instances of, like, just, here's a new word, there's a new word, this is a new word.
Right.
There's a little bit of, like, trying to make fetch happen.
Yes.
That I'm just like, okay, let's leave it to like one per act.
Totally agree with that. And if you are going to do that, if you're going to go full Clueless and create like a world where literally every single thing everybody says is specific to this world, it's got to be really good. Like, that's why Clueless was so effective, is because it was so, it felt like language that we had heard before, because we had, but it was sort of twisted in this more modern way for the time. This is not that. Like, this is them using, like, just saying like really, really dumb shit. And a lot of it teeters on being like really inappropriate now.
Oh yeah, that was I was like, whoa, this is, this would not fly.
Right. I'm like,
hello.
But, all that to say that, you obviously, you and I having this conversation, we can't ignore the fact that Jennifer's body has gone on to represent this very specific sort of subcategory of youth culture on the internet.
Yes.
It is cherry Twitter, is Jennifer's body.
Look at you, like, coming up with your own vernacular.
You know what I mean, though?
Yes.
Like, it literally is, and I don't know how to describe it if you're not somebody who like uses Twitter. It's like almost impossible to describe, but it's just like this movie created like a vibe.
It's, you know what I think, on some level, when they hashtag Y2K aesthetic, it's kind of like this.
Yeah,
on some level, it's like, it's hashtag Jennifer's body aesthetic.
It's so true. You're so right. Oh my god, that's so true. It really is. It's like, it's like, it's like this movie created a type of girl to emulate.
It also feels very, tell me if this makes sense, Tumblr to me.
Yes.
Like, oh my I feel God. Like it's such yes. a Tumblr vibe.
1,000%. It's so like 2014.
Yes. 2014. It's like queer, it's feminist. Like, we've all just been given the permission from like Beyonce to call ourselves feminists without being like, hey, I'm a feminist, but I don't hate men.
Right.
Which, let me say caveat, I was never that person because I've always hated men. But just like that, like a sort of like misandry, like we're getting into Daria, we're like after the fact, we're getting into Jennifer's body.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I don't know.
Totally. No, you're completely right. And you know, it's just when you scroll through the internet and like now it's, I feel like now it's, this movie is so like oversaturated that maybe this is like, we're on the tail end of it being like a thing. But like you said, it is like very 20, it's like Tumblr era. Like there was a moment at the peak of Tumblr being like a really cool website where this movie was like, you couldn't escape the imagery of it. It was literally everywhere. It was everybody's profile picture, GIFs, memes, like it's just, and the like the GIF of her burning her tongue, I think is like,
oh my God,
it will go in the internet vault, you know?
Well, and like they put out her little zip up Juicy Couture like heart hoodie on, I think it was Dolls Kill. They have it up every so often, and I think it like instantly sells out every time.
Yeah,
it's because so I wanted to get one, and I was like, oh, I saw that they had it yesterday, and now it's gone.
And it's funny because like I've read that like the one that they use in the movie is just like a kid's zip up.
Our Megan loves a kid's outfit.
Right, she does. Like it's literally like a kid zip up from like a department store. But yeah, it's just funny. It's just funny the way that Gen Z has sort of attached all of these thoughts and ideas onto this movie as far as like what it means to have this movie represent you online. Like it's just like a weird thing, I guess.
Well, okay, I would like to say then for the Gen Zers out there, may I suggest as a continuation of viewing is the movie Ginger Snaps.
Yes. Oh my God.
I watched it for the first time actually only a couple weeks ago. And it was a movie I had always wanted to watch because I would go through Blockbuster and I'd like walk through the horror section and I would just like look at the VHS covers and be like, ooh, I want to watch that and I want to watch that, but like my parents would never let me. Right. Ginger Snaps was one of those covers. And I finally watched it and there's a lot of Jennifer's body that's like pulled directly from it, I think.
I think so too. When I saw the slow motion scene, because I just watched Ginger Snaps and that slow motion scene, I was like, okay, obviously every, you know, coming of age film has a slow motion hallway scene. It's almost like mandatory, but the comparisons between specifically those two.
It's crazy. At the same point in the story. Ginger Snaps is she turns into a werewolf, but as she's like turning, when we first like realize her power, she has a strut down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
The shot looks exactly the same.
It does
look exactly the same. And also her sister in the movie is like pretty much the same character as Needy.
It's so true. Oh my God, you're so right. And she's becoming a monster. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And her sister's all by herself, like trying to figure it out.
Right.
With a little boy helper.
I love it in Jennifer's body because it's like, it's just so beautifully shot because the school is in mourning because everybody keeps dying. And everybody in the school is in black or gray, and everything's kind of darked out behind her. And she's just in this like neon vibrant, like she couldn't be, she's literally glowing, like literally she's like smiling ear to ear. Her skin looks incredible. She's bouncing in slow motion. Like it's just so iconic.
It's so like another trope that I love, and you just made me think of it by saying the school's in mourning, is a town, like we see this in Scream, like a town experiencing multiple murders and everyone not being like, okay, no one's leaving the house.
Right.
Nobody cares. All hands on deck.
Right.
It's just like, oh, the homecoming dance. And the, and the boy's mom is like, hey, there's some crazy serial killer on the loose and he likes little boys. Well, have fun.
Yeah, totally. His mom's like, here's some female pepper. And like, what is female pepper?
Female pepper spray.
What does that mean? Is it glittery pepper spray? Like, what does that mean?
You know what it is? It's pepper spray on like the open market is only ever, for the most part, marketed towards women. I mean, I've never met a man in my life who has carried pepper spray.
So true. My God, that's so true.
I have a pink pepper spray. I have like a vibrant teal pepper spray.
Love that.
You know, you get your lady's pepper spray.
It's so true.
God, women carry pepper spray to save themselves from men. Men carry bear spray to protect themselves from bears if they're like camping.
You are so fucking right. Men don't carry, and if men do, I mean, of course men carry weapons, but they literally carry like carry like crazy knives that are like hieroglyphic and, you know, yes, guns and shit. That's so funny.
I mean, all weapons that are for women, which is pepper spray and like brass knuckles, but the brass knuckles are like shaped like a cat with two little cat,
yeah,
pointy cat ears.
Yeah, still cute for your keys.
Still so cute. It's just like little cat ears.
It's so true. Oh my God. I've never really thought about that.
It's terrifying to be a woman, Troy.
God. Speaking of bears, I do want to talk about, Jennifer's like sex in this movie. Because I just think it's so well done. Like every time she hooks up with a guy, the circumstance is so completely fucking outrageous. Any like rationally thinking person, like if the roles were reversed and a woman was brought to an abandoned house, the woods,
oh my God,
they would be naturally freaking the fuck out. But this movie is like basically saying like men are so desperate to have sex with women that they will ignore in anything. I mean, they literally like every single scenario, like there's a million red flags and the guys are terrified, but they're like, but we're gonna have sex, right? You know what I mean? It's just so funny.
Well, and I think there's also another layer to it too of the way women are taught to trust their instincts and trust their gut. I think that's a conversation that like a lot of parents or mothers have with their daughters of like, you know, if men are dangerous, men are dangerous. So like, if, you know, if something feels wrong, like don't go alone with men. Men are never taught to look at the red flags and be like, oh, I could be in danger, because why would I ever be scared of a woman? Like,
right,
the idea that a girl could hurt them is so foreign that you would keep pushing forward because, okay, this might be weird, but she must be into some weird sex stuff.
Right.
It never occurs to guys like, oh no, she might hurt you.
You're so fucking right. And it literally goes to the point that she's like, she's sort of like pompous about it. Like she's literally making fun of them as she's like removing their belts and stuff, you know what I mean? Like, yes. When she tells the football player, like, you're gonna see your friend soon, as she's taking his belt off, like, your friend just died and she's telling you that you're gonna see him soon and you're still just like waiting for your belt to be undone, you know what
you're
I mean?
It's like, huh, what?
Yeah, you mean like when I die and go to heaven?
Yeah, I mean I do love it. Also, have you ever seen The Smokers with Busy Phillips?
I don't think so.
It's not a good movie. It's also batshit insane. But it just reminds me of this in the sense of how like men are just not raised to be afraid of like any women, but especially attractive women. Like, so these girls, it's basically like a rape revenge movie where these three girls go on a rape spree of men.
Holy shit.
And like it is jerk.
Yeah.
It's also like not a good movie. I feel like it's like probably scrubbed from the internet or something. But it, like, they're able to do this because nobody takes them seriously. Right. Nobody takes teenage girls seriously. Nobody sees like that there could be anger and violence inside of them.
Right. And like violence, that's like something that you should actually be afraid of. That isn't, you can't, yes, like, you can't grab every woman's shoulders and shake her into getting her senses back. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
It doesn't always work that way. Speaking of, I do think that there's, so I watched a Screen Prism video about Jennifer's Body before we started recording, and they made a really interesting point about her assault that, you know, normally, I thought this was like really fascinating. They talked about how around the time that this movie came out, you know, there were other movies that had really, really intense rape scenes that were praised, like the remake of The Last House on the Left.
Oh yeah.
And remember, like, all of the male critics like were obsessed with that long, drawn out, slow burn, traumatizing, really fucking intense rape scene. It got like such rave reviews. And in this movie, and they showed everything, and it's ironic, like, in this movie they chose not to, like, when she gets assaulted, it's very non-sexual, and they don't show the violence. Like, there's no, mm-hmm. They don't show the knife like going through her. It's all blurry, and they show his hand going up, but they never show it actually happening. The movie doesn't become really violent or really sexual until it's Jennifer.
Yeah.
Killing people. That's when the movie becomes violent. Because it's like, you know, that's obviously, that's the result of what happened to her. It's like that violence and that rage comes out through her, and that's so interesting.
It's very interesting, and it's also, it's so obvious that a woman would be writing and a woman would be directing this, because to me, I feel like you don't, the joy of watching a horror movie is, even no matter how scared you are, you know that like this will never happen to you. Like Michael Myers is never going to come after you. Like,
right,
there's never going to be some unkillable monster coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but using rape, which is such a real life fear that everyone, that every woman has to fear, and
right,
many, 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 many women have experienced,
right,
that takes it from horror movie to like exploiting trauma, in my opinion.
Right, I agree with that. That, I mean, and it's so funny that like the critics were so, because they were even saying, like, you know, a lot of the men who reviewed this movie when it came out didn't even include that scene in their review. They literally ignored that scene.
You know what it is? Okay, so sorry. Just you know, really like getting into my NPR like academia. So based on what I just said a second ago, it makes sense that men would watch Last House on the Left and just gush over that scene, because to most men, not all men, male sexual assault is a real thing.
Right.
But to the average man, that sort of rape is a horror that they know will never happen to them. It is Michael Myers.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's so intangible to them that they can hover above it and critique it without like feeling that very real fear that women go through.
Wow, that was like, that was profound.
I mean, you don't have to say that just because I set it up as being profound. Like, if you want to say that, you can.
That was really good. No, but you're completely right, because it's obvious that was, I mean, to not include that scene, which is literally the catalyst for the entire movie, to it's not include catalyst. That, like, it's obvious that it just had such little effect on you, and it could only have little effect on you if it's something, you know, because you don't perceive it to be real in your world.
That is actually bonkerinos to not include that scene when that is the creation of the monster. Yeah. We don't have the movie without that scene.
Right. Like, she's not just a sexy girl who eats boys and has sex. Like, that's not the movie. It's wild. And I also think, you know, that's watching that now, you know, again, post Me Too, post like the world that we're living in currently, I was like, wow, Promising Young Woman would not have been a movie if this didn't come out.
No.
This literally, like, this is basically the whole concept of Promising Young Woman is Jennifer's Body, just like more obviously based in reality, but like it's the same movie. And I thought one of the things that they did, the way that they explored her assault in this movie that I thought was really interesting, and something that they also did in Promising Young Woman, was that they showed the trickle-down effect of how her assault not only affected her and left her feeling really empty and angry and like hardened. She was like, you know, she started viewing men as just like these objects. And, you know, at the beginning of the movie, she like idolizes men and like puts them on this pedestal and is so desperate to please these douchebags in this band. And then she, after her assault, she's like literally ripping their heads off. But they also show like the effects that her assault had long-term on her best friend who was close to her.
And also, like, you think about it even further out that we don't even see in, for the most part in the movie, is like, it affects her best friend. It affects, you know, her best friend is put away into a mental institution. What did that do to her single mother who had nobody else? What did it do to Jennifer's mother who, you know, her life is now ruined by this trauma? Like,
yep.
The reverberations throughout an entire community.
Right. Totally. And it, yeah, just reminded me so much of Promising Young Woman, because obviously the whole movie kind of revolves around her like not living her life anymore because of the assault and death of her friend. It was just so effective. Like, it was just so, it's just so nuanced and like small, but also really big at the same time. You know what I mean?
It really is just too smart for the average horror, bro.
It is. It really is. Like, it's truly the Rubik's Cube of horror movies, honestly. It's the emotional Rubik's Cube of horror movies.
You know what I would love to know, actually, is I think particularly because this was pre-Me Too, and most, or the average male movie critic, probably wasn't forced to like look at movies like this in a nuanced way back in 2009.
Right.
I wonder how many of the critics who were like, would go back and watch the movie again with a more like thoughtful and less dismissive eye.
I know. I bet you that a lot of them have to be really embarrassed with the way that they reviewed the movie.
I'll bet. Because also, it just the way we're now relitigating how we treated these young women of the time.
Right.
And Megan Fox is in that conversation, like, oh, she's just like a bimbo. She's mm-hmm. a hot bimbo. So like, this movie is written, directed by women. It's for women. This is just like a bimbo girly pick.
Right, totally.
Girls totally. Try to do horror.
Yeah, exactly. And fail miserably.
Yeah.
That's exactly, yeah, and that's what it was for 10 years. And it's crazy because it's like, I think that this movie is so, it's hard to even, this is one of those rare cases, it's like a Carrie Bradshaw moment, where this movie is so intensely tied to Megan Fox's life mm-hmm. that the lines are just completely blurred, because it's like this movie was written with Megan Fox in mind as the character, based on the public's perception of her at the time. And the way that the movie was treated ended up being the way Megan Fox yes. was treated. And now it's having a resurgence at the same time that Megan Fox is also like, it's so meta that it feels like it's like written by fucking Wes Craven. Like,
yeah.
The scenario of the movie in Megan Fox's life is very Scream and Stab. You know what I mean? It's a lot.
Wow. You are so right. Yeah. It is so meta. Wow. Great point.
Thanks. I'm looking through my notes to see if there's anything else that I wanted to cover. I guess the last thing I wanted to say, I do have in my notes that I wanted to bring up the point that just generally, this movie does a good job of dipping in and out of horror and comedy, like just so, so well. It really catches you off guard because you genuinely are laughing. It's really genuinely funny.
Yeah. But
then it's really horrific at times, like truly.
Yes. Like,
and it all kind of comes out of nowhere where you're like, holy fuck, now she's like ripping this guy's stomach out, but she just made a really funny joke. Like, shit.
Yeah, I wonder how many people, just based on the marketing and everything, were really shocked by the movie. Like,
yeah,
you know, there are moments where we see someone disemboweled and a deer chimpity chomping on it.
True. Right. And then she's making a joke about, like, you know, her ass or something, and you're like, oh my god, like it goes back and forth so, like, sort of abruptly. You never really know what direction it's going to go in, which is fun. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on. Keep going.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the last thing that I definitely wanted to talk about was the finale, the final little moment of the movie between...
That is my favorite. To me, that is... It was transcendent. To me, after that, it was like, okay, this is what I want to like have in movies, is this sort of like last moment, just like absolutely satisfying little coda almost. Like, it's right. So short, and without it, it's a great movie without it, but that last part makes you levitate out of the movie theater.
Beyond. I think my favorite scene of this entire film is when she goes to her bedroom to fight her.
Ugh.
And it's like, so I've heard Diablo Cody say that the movie is called Jennifer's Body because it's about, you know, everybody seeing Jennifer just as like the sexy body and not knowing anything about like her heart. And at the beginning of the movie, Jennifer is like very aware that she has a heart and she's like a full person. But then after she gets assaulted, she's empty. And she says a bunch of times in the movie, like, I feel so empty. She talks about how sad she is when she's putting the concealer on her face and she like looks dead. And I love the scene where she, first of all, when she fucking rips the BFF necklace off of her. And it's like, that's the moment where she actually dies. Like, that to me is so fucking cool, because that's when she really dies. It's not like, when she gets stabbed, it's almost an afterthought. And, you know, she says, like, ow, my tit. And then Amanda Seyfried's like, no, your heart.
Your heart.
Not your tit, bitch. Your heart. I stabbed your heart. And she, like, that's an afterthought. Her true death was ripping that BFF necklace off. Like, she just, all of the life left her body.
And I love the moment where the lights turn on and Jennifer's mom walks in.
Mm.
And, like, the real world, like I love the moment after the moment where I feel like so often in horror movies or in action movies, anything where there's like violence, you really just see the violence. You don't see what it looks like after, like the more mundane part of it. Yeah. I think like we went through this like fantastical fight scene and then it's over. No, it's not over. The lights turn on. Here's reality. Jennifer's going to a prison institution.
Yeah.
There's no talking her way out of this. Like, you killed the beast and now there's still the rest of your life to live.
1,000%. And when her mom is holding her body, it's like, you know, the whole movie is so sort of like, it's like a reality that isn't a real reality. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it feels sort of cartoonish. But then in that moment, I feel like even for her, when she looks over at her and she sees that she's like lifeless, it's like a reminder that she was really just like a young girl. Like,
yes, she was like, she had a mother.
Yeah. Like, she's a mom now who's like fucking shattered, and she was a young girl that had something horrible happen to her that ruined her life, and now she's dead. It just becomes very real in that moment.
They actually really do a great job making it feel like, for most of the movie, that Jennifer is kind of just this person who exists in Needy's world.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't even think about what is going on at home. Like, she's going home and like with all of this baggage, you don't even think about like, oh, she probably has parents that she's right. also dealing with. Like, we see her at school, but like, she goes home and she has this whole other life that she's living that we never see. And then once she's dead, it's like, oh no. She had like these other people who like loved her unconditionally,
right?
And
yeah,
like it's very interesting to have the like water splashed on you, like, oh no, she had a mom.
Yeah,
this is a real person.
Yeah. And even honestly, before she dies, when she's just laying in her bed, like, to see her in her bedroom just being sad, because it's almost like, if you look at all of this stuff metaphorically, for just like the effects of rape and what it can do to a young girl, it's like she has these moments where she eats these boys, right? And then she feels full and whole for short periods of time. And she knows that it'll go away. And when it does go away, she's left feeling like empty and sad. And she's like, her hair is flat and her skin's dull, like she says earlier. And like, she just isn't herself until she finds another quick fix to make it better for like a moment, and then it happens again. And like, seeing her, and, you know, and they even say at the beginning, or when she shows like the effects that it had on her body, that she's like a demon now, like, there are things about her that are like stronger, and like, in some ways she's more mature, because she like immediately had to become a grown ass fucking woman in, you know, a night. But for the most part, like, she's really sad. And like, even just seeing her in her bed be sad is like really effective. Like, it just really, oh, this movie is so good.
I love it so much.
It's so good. for anybody watching or listening that hasn't actually watched the movie recently, it's on Amazon Prime, and I could not recommend it more. It literally, it holds, not only does it hold up, it's better now than it ever was. And
it was, yeah. You know what it is? At the end of the day, it was a movie that was ahead of its time, both mm-hmm. like subject matter, the people attached to it, like every, from top to bottom, it was just a movie that, you know, it was not for the early 2000s.
No, God, no, Jesus. Jesus, it really was not. It got,
twas note.
Fucking ripped apart limb from limb. Well, Dara, thank you so much for doing this with me. This was like exactly what I hoped it would be.
This was truly a dream. as always, love to talk about one of my fave films with one of my fave guys.
Well, tell people where they can find you. Tell people about your podcast and what you're working on and the girls next door and all the things.
Oh my God. Okay. So my podcast is Lay Do You Remember This? Like the club Lay Do. It's all early 2000s nostalgia deep dives. Right now I'm doing a season on the girls next door. A real deep dive into that, you know, just a lot of moments like this where you can't believe that in the early 2000s, you know, women were treated like they were. Not that they're not still treated that way, but it's right. Like socially acceptable. but yeah, find me on there. And I'm very active on Instagram. Lay Do You Remember This on Instagram. And allegedly TikTok. when I deign to post on there.
I can't imagine anybody listening. I mean, I guess there's maybe some new listeners that don't know that we have a 4-year recording history. But I mean, honestly, Dara's podcast is fucking incredible. When I tell you that I can't click fast enough when I see that there's a new Girls Next Door episode, it's just, it inspired me to watch the whole series again, which I did, which is fucking psychotic. It's even more psychotic out of order the way that I watched it. I just like let it play on YouTube the whole way through.
Oh yeah. And it's about nothing and it's about everything. So you can just like let it ride. But it is also quite bizarre to watch it with a post Me Too lens.
Yes. Yeah. It lends itself to the conversation that we just had, like watching a bunch of young girls live with an abusive old man and, you know, be at his beck and call and do things to get his attention. I mean, it's really just like the weirdest experience. But you guys, if you haven't listened to Dara's podcast in general, but specifically those episodes have just been beyond, like, honestly, so, so good. And yeah.
Troy, my king, I love you.
I love you. And I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. Dara, thank you again. And
of course.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Dunzo. This podcast is a part of the Solid Listen Network. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/solidlisten for exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McGee, and you can follow the podcast on all forms of social media at Dunzo Pod. That's D-U-N-Z-O. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.